Devaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Yasti havai rajarajo purushova adhanye dandam dhanayati brahmane vashrira dandam sapapiyam varake mukta sakaramukhe nipatiti tatra tatrati varai nishkishyamana navayavo yataive kanshupanda arta svarena svanayam vachin murchita Asmalam mubhagato yata veha drishta dosha uparuta. So translation. In his... I am, but it's not working very well. It needs to be turned up a little bit. Maybe if I open my mouth. Huh? Text 16 and 17. From 5th canto, chapter 26. I saw something the other day. They've invented this lens that you can put it in front of something, and anything you put it in front of disappears. So if I put it in front of the microphone, I'll be able to see the book on the bookstand. In his next life, a sinful king or a governmental representative who punishes an innocent person or who inflicts corporal punishment upon a brahmana is taken by the Yamadutas. That's okay, I don't want it too close. Let me turn up a little bit. Is taken by the Yamadutas to the hell named Sukaramukha, where the most powerful assistants of Yamaraj crush him exactly as one crushes sugar cane to squeeze out the juice. The living entity cries very pitiably and faints, just like an innocent man undergoing punishments. This is the result of punishing a faultless person. So the second verse. By the arrangement of the Supreme Lord, low-grade living beings like bugs and mosquitoes suck the blood of human beings and other animals. Such insignificant creatures are unaware that their bites are painful to the human being. However, first-class human beings, brahmanas, kshatriyas and vaishyas, are developed in consciousness, and therefore they know how painful it is to be killed. A human being endowed with knowledge certainly commits sin if he kills or torments insignificant creatures who have no discrimination. The Supreme Lord punishes such a man by putting him into the hell known as Andakupa, where he is attacked by the birds and beasts, reptiles, mosquitoes, lice, worms, flies, and any other creatures he tormented during his life. They attack him from all sides, robbing him of the pleasure of sleep. Unable to rest, he constantly wanders about in the darkness. Thus, in Andakupa, his suffering is just like that of a creature in the lower species. And Srila Prabhupada's purport. From this very instructive verse, we learn that lower animals created by the laws of nature to disturb the human being are not subject to punishment. Because the human being has developed consciousness, however, he can do anything against the principles of Arashram Dham without being condemned. Krishna states in the Bhagavad Gita 4.13, Chaturvanyam mayashristam guna karma vibhagasam. According to the three modes of material nature and the work ascribed to them, the four divisions of human society were created by me. Thus all men should be divided into four classes, brahmanas, kshatriyas, vaishyas and shudras, and they should act according to their ordained regulations. They cannot deviate from their prescribed rules and regulations. One of these states that they should never trouble any animal, even those that disturb human beings. Although a tiger is not simple if he attacks another animal and eats its flesh, a man with developed consciousness does so, he must be punished. If a man with developed consciousness does so, he must be punished. In other words, a human being who does not use his developed consciousness, but instead acts like an animal, surely undergoes punishment in many different hells. So here we see it's describing the various types of hells that a living entity suffers when they engage in sinful activities. And we see this section of the Bhagavatam and indeed the rules that are there in the Vedic literatures, Manusmriti, etc., are there to regulate the living entity, because the nature of the living entity, as described in the Bhagavad Gita, is that it's called chara, which means by nature they go down to the lowest level. Just like water, you know, if you pour water on the table, it's not going to sit on the table if you keep pouring. It'll go to the floor, and it will keep pouring more and more and more. It'll eventually flow out the door, go down the stairs, and just by the force of gravity, it'll always find the lower level. So in the same way with a human being, left to their own devices, generally speaking, they'll go down to a lower level. So therefore, the Vedic literatures regulate the living entity. That's, you know, most of these regulations are simply there for regulating the living entity. Yet we see that people who are in ignorance don't understand that. They think, oh, why are these restrictions there? It's just stopping my enjoyment. And therefore, as being described in these two verses, you know, they'll commit acts which are not actually appropriate for a human being to commit. They may, for instance, you know, just talking about, you know, when these lower living entities, they attack us and they bite us. So, you know, we see sometimes children might get a mosquito or a fly or something like that, or a bug, and sort of capture it and pull its wings off and things like that. And for those types of things, they have to suffer, because that living entity is just acting according to its nature. It doesn't realize that it's inflicting suffering upon another living entity. As Krishna explains in the third chapter of the Gita, that the living entity is forced to act according to the modes of material nature and cannot refrain from doing so even for a moment. This is chanamapi. Not even for a moment can you stop from doing that. So we see a mosquito, it's just going to bite. You can, or just in the Chaitanya Bhavan, when I'm going up to the school every day, there's two birds making a nest there. And every day the cleaner comes along and cleans the nest away, thinking to solve the problem. But the next day the bird comes back and starts making the nest again. And that's its nature. We have these things in Australia called bush turkeys. They're a really interesting creature. They're kind of like they make these big nests, you know, maybe about this high, and just like piles of mounds of leaves and sticks and things like that. And what they do is they'll very strong legs, and they'll just like rake up all the surrounding bushland and make a big pile. So last year, one was deciding to make it next to my garden. I grow a vegetable garden there in Australia, and so he was. All the mulch that I put in the garden to stop the weeds, he was just digging it all out. And I kept chasing him away, and it's just like, he'd come back and just do the same thing again and again and again. So in the end, I just gave up and left him to his devices and just tried to work around him. And at the end of it, you know, he made his nest and it all composted down. So it was very nice, rich soil. So I just dug it up and used it. So, you know, the thing is, like, with a living entity like that, he's just acting according to his nature, and no amount of endeavor that I can do to change the way he's doing things will change him, because he's acting according to his nature. But a human being is not like that, or shouldn't be like that. But a human being who's influenced by ignorance is like that. They're influenced by this lower nature, therefore they act according to the lower nature. Yet because the human life is a life of responsibility, when a human being acts like an animal, just acts driven by the modes of nature, then they have to suffer reactions for that. Whereas, as we see, it's explained in some of these purports here, that an animal such as, like, a, you know, Prabhupada's talking here in this purport to verse 17, such as a tiger, when he goes and eats another living entity, for him that's not sinful, because that's his nature, that's what he's meant to do, that's what he has the body for. You know, according to his past activities, he's been awarded a body which forces him to eat flesh. But the human life is not meant for that type of activity. Human life is actually meant, as is pointed out by Rishabh Dev, is actually meant for tapo dibyam putrakayena shatpam. This higher activity is this tapasya, divine tapasya, whereby one can understand the higher goal of life. Same point is made there by Prahlad Maharaj, that human form of life, very rare. It's not meant for the activities of eating, sleeping, mating, defending, which he says are available to the hogs and the dogs which eat stool, the village animals, vidbhujamye, as pointed out by Rishabh Dev. Just the village animals. This is the activities they engage in, eating, sleeping, mating, defending. And we see here in verse 16, or is it 17, it points out about, you know, eating other living entities. Then this is actually not the business of a human being. A human being is actually meant to use their life for understanding higher things, higher principles, like you know, dharma or religiosity. That's the point of having a human form of life. Yet if one doesn't use that life in the proper fashion, then one will naturally have to bear the consequences. Then it's interesting that in a because oftentimes we might look at these things and think, oh, you know, I'm doing performing devotional service, therefore I don't have to worry about this type of stuff. In a maybe about 5 or 6 verses previous, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur in his purport, he talks about the different types of ignorance and mentions how that, you know, if one's acting unknowingly performing some sinful activity, that then the reactions are small. But if one knows the difference between pious and impious activities and goes ahead and does impious activities, then the reactions are intermediate, is the word that's used. And then if one's an atheist, then the reactions are full, they're quite extreme. Yet he also points out that it's like this ignorance can come from inattention. So I was just reflecting upon these different, you know, because it's quite a, in many ways, quite a heavy chapter, this, and talks about a lot of very extreme reactions. And I was reflecting on how would this actually impact upon a devotee. And based on the comments of the acharyas, if we are inattentive in devotional service, or if we think, you know, it's just like we see the, what's the, is the seventh offense, committing sinful activities in the strength of the holy name, is considered to be one of the worst of the offenses. So if due to inattention, we become lax in our devotional service, we may, you know, give up the devotional process, or we may even perform sinful activities, then one is exposing themselves to this kind of reaction. So in devotional service, it's in our best interest to always endeavor to be very, very attentive to the process of devotional service to ensure that we, you know, do our best endeavor. We're trying to follow the rules and regulations of devotional service and to maintain our or develop our Krishna consciousness. So, you know, from what I can understand, these types of reactions can also afflict devotees if they're inattentive in their practice of devotional service. And even like, it's kind of interesting also because there's a verse in the third canto where Kapiladeva is speaking to his mother, Devahuti, and he says, Jantuvai bhava etasmin yam yam yoni manu vrajet. And the essence of that verse is basically that the living entity finds a particular type of satisfaction no matter what species of life they find themselves in. And in the purport, Prabhupada talks about, you know, hogs and dogs and things like that. And he talks about how the hogs, they eat stool. And for someone who has a higher consciousness, the idea of eating stool, not alone eating stool, like, you know, when you're walking around here in India sometimes and you might accidentally stand on stool, that's just, you know, such a repulsive thing for us. But to the idea of actually to eat stool is quite, you know, unimaginable that you could do. But we see that a living entity in a hog's body, that's what he's eating every day. I remember one time I was in Vrindavan and I was just down in the bazaar, Lord Bazaar, and there was a mother, she was holding the hand of her child while the child was passing stool, and there's this hog came to come up behind and just pushed the child out of the way so he could get the fresh stool straight away. Such an enthusiasm for eating such a, you know, a low-class food. Yet, you know, for him, he finds that quite normal, but for us, we're finding that repulsive. So the point that I'm getting to here is Kapiladeva is making this point that no matter what species of life a living entity finds himself, he finds a particular type of satisfaction in that species and is never averse to being situated like that. So in the same way, we're reading these descriptions here, and Yamaraja's motivation is by punishing these sinful persons that they'll give up their sinful activities and they'll become God conscious. Yet we see by the forces of Maya, by the force of material nature, they don't actually give up the sinful activity, but persist with the sinful activity. Because what happens is like, just like we're seeing in this Andukupa, you know, the living entity is being, this is in verse 17, it's talking about Andukupa, which means, you know, like a dark well, very, very dark place. And he's being beaten and you know, attacked in so many ways, being bitten by birds and beasts and reptiles have been constantly bitten by this. And you'd think, wow, that's so much suffering. How could the living entity ever be satisfied in that? And I can think of an example. I remember years ago when I was a young man, a friend was taking me for a ride on a motorbike. And we had to go some distance, about 3 or 4 hours. And it was one of those motocross bikes, so the seats aren't very comfortable, they're quite hard. And it was going over very, very rough terrain. So it was really painful. But at the end of that, I got off the bike, I was, that feels so good, because the pain had stopped. So in the same way we see these living entities here, it's like, you know, there is moments of time where the pain or where the animals stop biting them or when they're not being beaten or when they can escape. So there's just moments where the suffering is not as much. And therefore they think, oh, it's okay. I'm not suffering right now. And then the suffering starts again. And it's the same for every living entity in this world. The same in this, here we are in this existence. The same thing's happening. We see, you know, for so many living entities, it's like, you know, from the perspective of someone who's a little bit more cultured or developed consciousness, they're looking, they see they're suffering so much. Yet these living entities in this world are thinking they're enjoying so much. And this is the situation for all living entities because of the influence of Maya or ignorance. They're actually thinking that this is the best. They have an expression in Australia, which I'm sure is common around the world, where they say it doesn't get any better than this. You know, thinking this is the height of enjoyment. And actually we can see that as life goes on, it really doesn't get much better. It kind of gets progressively worse. The body starts to fall apart, aches and pains, you know, you have to wear glasses, your hair starts falling out, etc., etc. But the living entities are bewildered by the forces of Maya, as Prabhupada explains in a previous purport about the two different types of Maya, the Prapakatma Shakti, one that pushes us down or pulls us down, and the Avaranatmaka Shakti, which covers us over into believing that this is actually a very nice life. But one who has higher consciousness, one who actually understands, you know, the situation in this material body, understands that this is not my natural condition, this is not the place where I belong. You know? And therefore understanding that this is not the right place for me, searches out what is the right place. And as it says, this is actually the beginning of the human form of life, Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Now you have the human form of life, inquire into the nature of the Absolute. What is my situation? Who am I? We see Sanatana Goswami, he asks Lord Chaitanya, who am I? What am I meant to be doing with my life? Most people don't even make this endeavor. They don't try to find out what we're doing here in this world. What is the actual business of the human form of life? They think, you know, they take this hedonistic philosophy, eat, sleep, drink, and be merry. That's what their whole life is focused around. As I mentioned, you know, I come from Australia, and Australians are famous for many things, like sports and things like that. One of the things they're most famous for is drinking beer. They have the longest bar in the world. They have these things called, you know, they like to boast about it, you know, like all these different things they have. We had a prime minister in the country years ago when he was a university student. They have these things, probably in England they have the same thing called a yard glass. It's this long, it's 36 inches long, and they fill it up with beer. I don't know how much it takes, but they put a lot of beer in it. And then they have these competitions to see who can drink this beer the fastest. So we had this prime minister years ago, and his great claim to fame before he became the Prime Minister of Australia was he could drink a yard glass of beer quicker than you could pour it down a sink. And that was, you know, and he's proud of it. And people become very proud of that. So we see in Australia, you know, and it's the same in every country in the world, but I'm just like reflecting, you know, what my experience is. As you know, Australia, as in every country in the world, their whole culture, their whole consciousness is focused on enjoying. How much I can enjoy in this world. How much alcohol I can drink, how much sex I can have, how much food I can eat. Yet, we see with the material body, it has its limitations. You know, the more alcohol you drink, it's not like you can drink unlimited amounts of alcohol or take unlimited amounts of intoxication, because at some point, the body tilts. It just can't cope with it anymore. Or it's not like you can eat unlimited amounts of food, because at some point what happens is it just keeps pushing up and up and up, and then there's a valve at the top of your stomach, and then the pressure on that causes you to wind up with a condition called gastric reflux, which is a very unpleasant, you know, get this like burning sensation all the time. Now, so the more we try to enjoy ourselves in the material world, ultimately the suffering, we bring suffering upon us, because as is explained, the suffering is concomitant with the enjoying, with the enjoyment. Just as we're destined to get a certain amount of enjoyment in this life, we're also destined to get a certain amount of suffering. So an intelligent living entity obviously doesn't go looking for suffering. Only a foolish living entity looks for suffering. But the more we try to find this enjoying situation, then we're just bringing upon ourselves suffering. So these, obviously, like, you know, there's only one chapter in the Bhagavatam about this kind of condition, but it's just there to remind us that this material world is not a place of enjoyment. It's actually a place where we come because we have desires separate from Krishna. But ultimately our goal is to become God conscious, to understand that this is not my abode, this is not my place, and to go back home to Godhead. And therefore we see that, you know, Krishna comes himself, he sends his various empowered devotees to present Krishna consciousness, to present, you know, Dharma according to time, place and circumstance to the conditioned living entities, so they can actually come to the point of understanding their nature, understanding who they are, understanding that they're not this body. And this is the essential point which the living entity in this material world is struggling with, is convinced, the living entity is convinced that I am this body. Therefore, my way to happiness is through satisfying the body, through satisfying the senses. And because of this ignorance, this is the fundamental principle of ignorance, because of this ignorance, the living entity is struggling in so many different ways, or striving in so many different ways to try to enjoy the body. And ultimately just brings suffering to the body. The more you try to satisfy the body, the more suffering you bring upon yourself, because the body just, it's not a suitable vehicle for enjoyment. It just doesn't have the capacity for unlimited enjoyment. Whereas the soul has that capacity. The soul has the capacity for unlimited enjoyment. And the more we try to satisfy the body in this way, the more the body decays, the more the body falls apart, and brings and because of this identification with the body, then we identify with the suffering that comes as a result. But an intelligent person, understanding the situation in this material world, endeavors to find out, what is my situation here? What am I supposed to be doing? You know, what is the goal of life? And, you know, someone, as is pointed out in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, one who's actually fortunate, understands, you know, they seek out Krishna, they seek out Guru, they understand their situation in this material world, and by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, they get this, the process of Krishna consciousness. And then that then enables them to get out of this samsara, this cycle of birth and death, and ultimately return back to the spiritual world. And of course there's many things that could be said about these different hells, but I think it's enough to say that they're not really places we want to go to, because the reality is that even in this material world, you know, there's so much suffering in this material world. It's not, you know, as Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur would say, it's not a fit place for a gentleman. You know, it's just, you know, it's a very, very difficult place. And you know, coming from, you know, a country that's relatively developed in terms of you know, material comforts, etc. like that, and then coming to a place like India, which is not so developed, you know, driving on the roads here and the crazy drivers and dealing with immigration and all these kind of things, you can see that in this material world there's so many, there's already so much suffering here, so why do we need to endeavor to find any more? You know, yet we see that, you know, even though these scriptures are talking about these different types of things, and as Prabhupada points out in a previous purport, that even though Yamaraj is trying to the best of his endeavor to give these living entities the understanding that this is not the way to act, still covered over by Maya, still they perform these activities, and it's just this cycle. They just go through this cycle. They perform the activities, and they have to suffer. And they think, oh, but next time it'll be better. And so they perform the activities, and again they have to suffer. It just goes on and on like this. And the living entity, you know, until he actually has this situation where he inquires about the nature of the self, where he tries to find out their actual situation in the material world, then this cycle will continue on and on and on. And as it's pointed out throughout the scriptures, that until one actually comes into contact with a devotee of Krishna, then this cycle will continue. Because they don't actually have knowledge of the self. They don't actually have knowledge of what is their situation in this material world. So until one can actually come to this point of understanding, at least at least intellectually understanding I'm not this body. You know, obviously to have the realization I'm not this body and to act in that capacity is quite different and quite a developed stage of consciousness. But at least one should intellectually understand that I'm not this body and endeavor to act in that capacity, endeavor to you know, act as a devotee of Krishna and at least understand that I'm not this body. And in this way, this will help us to eventually overcome the influences of the modes of material nature and avoid such a condition of life. And I don't really have a lot to say about these two verses. Any questions, Will? Any comments? Can you maybe talk a little bit louder because there's a bit of competition with the fans?
No. All right, Bill.
Okay. Yeah, so my question is that in the Vedas it says that one can, there's six kinds of aggressors that one can kill or defend oneself against. And, you know, it says in the purport that an animal, you know, he doesn't know that it's causing pain to others, so therefore it should not be attacked or killed. I can't remember the exact words. So I was just wondering, where is the line drawn? Because obviously, you know, if there's a tiger attacking your family or something like that, you know, there's, you know, some reaction. In fact, my understanding is, I don't know the exact reference, but Prabhupada said you could even kill a mosquito if it's attacking you. So where is the line drawn?
Yeah. So, you know, because this is a scriptural injunction that, you know, if the six types of aggressors, if you retaliate against them, there's no sin. So that means that you won't, you know, wind up in such a situation as is being described here. Yet for someone who's actually a Vaishnav, there's the question of compassion as well. So even though a mosquito may attack with a sharp weapon, you know, with its drill and you know, dig into your skin to get blood, and if you were to retaliate, that wouldn't necessarily be sinful. Yet, because it's acting according to its nature, because that's what it does, then a Vaishnava is thinking, you know, this living entity is in ignorance, you know, and by killing it, it's not going to help the situation. So better we try to, you know, chant Hare Krishna to it, or try to give it some prasad or something. You know, these different living entities give prasad. And actually there's a conversation where Tamal Krishnamaraj was asking Prabhupada a very similar question. And Prabhupada explained to him that there's no sin, but a Vaishnava is compassionate. A Vaishnava won't kill this living entity. And we see in the example, in the stories of, you know, so many great acharyas, Rasikananda, for instance, you know, he was in one village in I believe it was in Orissa. And there was a mad elephant came and was attacking the village and destroying things. I mean, really, really dangerous creature. I actually saw a YouTube video on this elephant in somewhere in South India who got mad with his keeper and just completely wiped the guy out, like used him like a rag to wipe the floor and just killed him. And very, very dangerous creatures when they get angry. And so everyone, even the king, the soldiers, they were terrified of this creature, and this devotee, Rasikananda, understood that this living entity is in the mode of ignorance. He doesn't actually understand that he's not this body. He doesn't understand that he's in this conditioned life. He went and started to preach to this elephant, and by his endeavor actually converted him to a devotee. Did the same thing for a tiger. So obviously I'm not suggesting that you do that, but what I'm saying is the Vaishnava has this type of compassion that sees that all living entities are actually in the mode of ignorance. All living entities are thinking they're the body. So the business of a Vaishnava is to help them to overcome that conditioning in whatever way they can. You know, for us, then maybe we don't want to go into the jungle and start preaching to the Bengal tigers and telling them you're not this body and stuff like that. But maybe there's ways that we can help them to overcome that bodily condition of life. I mean, it's not something I would, you know, recommend just going, you know, to preach to tigers and things. But there's different ways, you know, just living entities, you know, Hare Das Thakur recommended chanting Hare Krishna loudly, so all the other living entities would benefit from that. So there's different things we can do to help living entities. Yeah. Dakshin, go. But I don't think killing them is the best thing. You know, if we can avoid killing, then better to avoid killing. And even like, sorry Dakshin, I just want to finish this. Even one time at Bhaktivedanta Manor, they had a plague of mice and rats. And then this devotee, as Prabhupada was leaving, this devotee came out and he said, Prabhupada, can we kill the mice? And Prabhupada spun around and told him, he said, you should be killed. And, you know, I've heard different interpretations of that, but it may be that Prabhupada was, you know, pointing out that, you know, because you were not being clean, that actually, you know, you're inviting these animals to come here. You know, so generally Vaishnava avoids killing other living entities.
Yes, absolutely. As a part of compassion, may I add that you must protect all the living entities, all of the animals. And a part of that is they have a life, you have a life, and you make their life comfortable for them. Whether it's a Bengal tiger, you give them their habitat. If it's a mosquito, well, it's a difficult situation there. They've bred, they've caused major diseases and so forth. But always there must be that attitude, you can avoid this by this situation. We can avoid eating animals, eating cows, eating chickens, eating pigeons, eating goats, which they're what they're up to this weekend, by having another foodstuff and allowing the animals to have their foodstuff. You know, you don't interfere with them. You allow them their life. And that's a crucial thing, and that's a part of what's happened to the planet and happens to the planet in Kali Yuga. But due to the mission of Lord Chaitanya, we see him in the Jarakanda forest, due to what we should, how we should behave as devotees, is with absolute tolerance and compassion for all living entities. You know, we have enough trouble being tolerant and compassionate towards each other. What to speak of watching out for all of the other living entities. So I think if we take that process to the ultimate degree and have compassion on all living entities, we will be able to live in harmony here, and you won't have these outrageous outbreaks of mice, as we said there. What was the cause of the mice plague? What is the cause of the mosquito plague here at Gwalpani? And we address those issues.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And actually, we see that this is actually the role of a king. Is you know, in modern days, we see, like, you know, governments get elected based on all the promises they make. And generally what they're promising is they'll give the human beings a better standard of living, they'll give them a better standard of sense gratification. Yet rarely do we hear of a politician, right? Well, not even rarely, we probably never hear of a politician who's agreeing to take care of all the lower living entities, the animals and etc. No, their whole thing is just focused on human beings. So therefore we can understand that their policies are based on sense gratification. Therefore, other living entities suffer. Because sense gratification essentially means that I'm enjoying at the expense of somebody else. And so then when other living entities are suffering, this is because of sense gratification.
I just had one more question, Prabhu. You know, sometimes when... microphone. Yeah, when somebody is out trying to spread Krishna consciousness, especially if they're dressed, you know, like in dhoti and so on and so forth, people will automatically, when you approach them, they'll be like, you know, you're trying to, you know, push your religion on me, and you're just going to tell me that I'm going to go to hell if I do the wrong thing, and I don't want to have anything to do with that. But if you explain to them, no, well, actually, we're really just trying to, you know, raise consciousness and increase, relationship with the divine and things like that, and present it in a positive way, then people are a lot more apt to actually take it. So I was wondering if you could maybe explain why it is that people are so adverse to a fear-based approach of presenting, you know, God consciousness, and rather they're more encouraged and inspired to actually take it up seriously when they see the positive angle of why to do things like not to kill animals and not to exploit people.
I may not be the best person to answer a question like that. As much as I can understand, it's generally because they see us as a threat to their sense gratification. It's really all it is. I remember in Thailand, when I used to go there when I was brahmachari, and a lot of the girls have a fear of monks there, because they think that if a monk comes, they might not find a husband or something. You know, there's some superstition they have there. So, you know, they got this idea that, you know, better to stay away from monks and things so that they can get married. But yeah, mostly it's just because the fear of, you know, us interfering with the sense gratification. But as you're so rightly presenting, rather than trying to proselytize or you know, convince them of our belief, it's just befriend them and develop a relationship, because you get far much more response from a person if they like you than if you're presenting the absolute truth. Of course, if someone's looking for the absolute truth, then fine, but generally speaking, you find people aren't looking for that. But people in this world are looking for relationships, because, you know, that's, this world is made up of relationships, and they're all looking for relationships. So if we can provide a satisfying relationship for people, then they're going to be inclined to listen to what we have to say. If they're inspired by us as people, then they're going to be, you know, interested to hear what we have to say. And that's what we see, you know, like you look at Srila Prabhupada. In the beginning, he didn't actually lay down so many rules. He just developed relationships with the devotees, and then when they actually became attached to Prabhupada, they were inspired by Prabhupada, then they started to ask questions. And then Prabhupada told them. So, you know, that's my approach, is I try to develop relationships with people, and then they're inspired by what you do, by what you say. Peter Nagarikaru?
Of course we shouldn't, you know, preach on fear-based preaching is a pretty bad idea. But the thing is sometimes I've noticed that after a person has been introduced to Krishna consciousness a little bit, there's an attraction for this chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Somehow or other, especially among young men of a certain age, they read it and they like it. It somehow or other, there is an attraction to this chapter in the this chapter in the Srimad Bhagavatam. They read it, and I know a lot of devotees like that. I know at a certain point in my devotional service, this description of the hellish planets was like very attractive to me. At a certain point in my devotional service, I read it and I go, it was like wow and far out like this. And so it's not always a negative thing to hear these things. Certain times people like this chapter. I just want to point that out. At a certain point in their devotional service, they like this
chapter. Yeah, but then not necessarily the most favorable things to use in preaching is like, you know, if you do this, you're going to go to this hell, and
people
just write you off as some sort of like extremist.
Yeah, I'm saying that's true, but I'm saying at a certain point when people are more relaxed and they've accepted Krishna consciousness to some degree, you can turn them on to this chapter and they like it.
Yeah.
Krishna Prabhu.
My question is, as you said in this, that
living entities are going through, you know, committing sinful activities.
A little bit louder, I can't quite hear you.
Yeah. The living entities, after committing sinful activities, they're going through Yamraj and going through all the punishments. But what we see is, in spite of getting the punishment, and living entities coming back and committing the same thing again and again. And, you know, it is basically punishments of a rectification. But, you know, most of the, you know, today's population in the world, they are mostly sinful. So, the rectification process, is it very gradual process, or why is it not having much effect?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, we hear the description of samsara, so it's just a cycle. And basically most living entities are stuck in the cycle until they have some good fortune. Ramanda Brahmati Kamana Bhagavanji, Guru Krishna Vishakri Bhoy Bhakti Bhakti Bij. So when they actually receive that good fortune of coming into contact with a Vaishnava, that breaks the cycle for them. It's the only thing that can break the cycle. Rupa Goswami points this out in the beginning of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. But the only thing that can actually break the cycle is the contact of an advanced devotee. Therefore we see when these advanced devotees, they actually give their life to propagating Krishna consciousness. We see the example of Prabhupada. His whole life was just focused on spreading Krishna consciousness for the benefit of others. This para upakara. We give our life for the benefit of others. And we see many great devotees, they simply give their life for the benefit of others. And this is the only thing that can break the cycle, because as we see at the end of the fifth chapter, right, this is the last chapter here, is talking about sinful activities and the reaction. And then in the beginning of the sixth chapter, I think it's about the fifth verse or something like that, Parikit Maharaj, he asks Sukadeva Goswami, he says, but like, you know, what's the benefit of this? Because this is just like the bathing of the elephant. He goes into the water, he bathes, then he comes out and he throws dirt all over himself, because they're just performing sinful activities, and then they're suffering, and then performing. It's a cycle. And he said, yeah, it's very good, you've been listening, you know. So only by this point of coming into contact with Krishna consciousness, by the association of a sadhu, can one get out of this process. Yeah? Okay, anything else? Okay. Samaveta Bhakti Vrindiki, Shri Prabhupada ki, Shishi Radha Madhavaki, Jainita Gopalamani.